Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
All eyes have been on the Paris Climate Agreement since Donald Trump got elected. He said he wants the U.S. to withdraw from it, but I think we should be paying attention to what's happening in an Oregon courtroom where the plaintiffs in Giuliana v. United States won a major victory. NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is with me. And Paul, I think we got to bring in our guest right away. This is very intriguing.
Great stuff. Bring him on. Good morning, Carrie.
Jacob LaBelle is with us. He's 19 years old. He's one of the plaintiffs in the case, and he's with us from Roseburg, Oregon. Jacob, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much. It's good to be here.
And Julia Olson is with us. She's chief legal counsel for our Children's Trust, and she's with us today from Eugene, Oregon. And Julia, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us, Carrie.
Jacob, the lawsuit of which you are a plaintiff against the United States says climate change is violating your constitutional rights. Tell me what you're arguing here.
So, very briefly, I live and grew up on a farm in Roseburg, Oregon, a family farm. And so what I'm personally facing right now is increased drought, increased heat waves, increased danger of wildfire. And that's what affects me personally. And that's what affects my ability to continue farming on my farm in the future. And then among all the other plaintiffs, there's a plaintiff in Florida called Levi, and he's facing sea level rise threatening some of his properties. And so that's, you know, life, liberty, and property. That's one of the things that we're arguing in the lawsuit. And so we're all facing these very real, very imminent dangers that are due to climate change. And then we're also depriving future generations of, a safe world, because we'll be facing social unrest if we don't do anything about our emissions. And so that, I think, Judge Eichen in her recent ruling tied it up very accurately when she said that it is a stable climate is fundamental to a healthy and living society, a civilization. So, yeah.
Julia, are you making case law here? I mean, is there any precedence for what you're arguing here?
Well, there's a lot of precedent going back to the founding documents of our nation, and you can see that reflected in Judge Aiken's decision. But what's really groundbreaking about this decision is it's the first time that a federal court in the United States has recognized that part of our fundamental rights embedded in the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution is the right to have a climate system capable of sustaining human life. And she says that is essential to a free and ordered society. And so that's really what's new about this decision. But the basis for her decision is very ancient. It goes back to ancient times and from the beginning of our country.
Julia, Paul Huttner here. Looking at this, the big picture, this is sort of straight out of a Disney movie. 21 children and young adults sue the federal government for the right to a stable climate system. Judge dismisses the U.S. government's motion to dismiss the case. I'm wondering, is that decision sort of climate change's Aaron Brockovich moment? You've called this one of the most significant decisions in our nation's history. Why is that? And could this reach the Supreme Court, by the way?
Well, it is one of the most significant because it's the first time our courts are really engaging in the question that needs to be answered, which is if our government continues to act in the way it's acting, which is to facilitate a fossil fuel-based energy system, and that destroys the climate system for these young people and for future generations, does that violate the fundamental rights we hold in our nation under our Constitution? And so part of the case is about really showing that for over five decades, the federal government has known that by continuing to burn fossil fuels, it would cause catastrophic impacts to climate and to oceans. We have evidence going back five decades of this knowledge. And even with that knowledge, the government has continued to facilitate the same kind of energy system and infrastructure. And so this court is looking at that systemic problem in our nation that has to shift. And so eventually the case is likely to end up in the Supreme Court, but right now we're focused on moving to trial. We're also focused on opening the door to President Obama to come to the table and engage in settlement discussions during the last couple months of his administration.
You know, and Julia, that's something that I wanted to ask Jacob about. I mean, Jacob, you are aware that you have a president in office who has done a lot on climate change, wanted to do more, couldn't get some of his legislation through Congress, but he is, as head of the federal government, named in this suit. Do you feel some ambivalence about suing President Obama on this issue?
Well, first of all, I think in response to that, I'd say that he could have done more even without Congress. And a couple examples of that is the approving drilling on federal lands. So he has control as the executive branch. He has control over what goes on federal lands. And so, you know, all the fracking and drilling for oil that's been going on in that area, increasing our emissions from the United States, that's something he had control over. And then he also had control to a certain extent over the permitting of infrastructure projects, such as the Jordan Cove project, which I was facing in my home state of Oregon. And those permits were almost always, you know, handed out by the federal government agencies. So I do think he's spoken a good deal about climate change, which is good. And so this was basically to hold him to the standard that science has set. That was what this lawsuit was about. So I didn't really feel any ambivalence about suing him, even though I did support his campaign, and I do feel that he's spoken a good game on this. But he needed to put his actions where his mouth was, and now we're facing Donald Trump. So that's a completely different game.
Jacob, you are clearly very well informed on climate change. You know, we talked to a lot of adults on this show that are not as well informed as you are. Is that something that's common to your generation? And why do you think the issue of climate change seems to resonate so deeply with many young people?
I think it's something that's definitely a lot more common with our generation. And you're seeing even very, very young kids, you know, our youngest plaintiff from the lawsuit is 9 years old, but you're seeing very, very young children who are feeling this very deeply, in fact, more deeply than perhaps their parents or their families, and surprising them with the depth of emotion and the way that they relate to this crisis. And I think that's natural, because this is going to be their world. This is going to be our world, and it's going to be the world we raise our children in. And so they hear these news on television and on the news about, you know, sea level rise of a couple meters possibly, and Greenland's ice sheet melting, and you know, increased droughts and parts of the world becoming unlivable, and they feel it very deeply. So I think that's definitely just something that's natural.
Julia, I noticed you used the word settlement, that you'd hope that President Obama would come to the table. I mean, is that really how this case goes forward? Do you have the funds and the wherewithal for a long, protracted suit against the U.S. government? This could take years if it ends up working its way through courts, couldn't it?
It could. So first, I want to be really clear that we have been preparing for trial for over a year and compiling evidence, and we're about to start the discovery process against both the federal government and the fossil fuel industry interveners. And we will be moving forward to trial, and we do have the resources. They come in all shapes and forms. People donate to our Children's Trust, which helps support this work, and our attorneys donate their time pro bono because they care so deeply about this issue and about the plaintiffs. But, you know, while we're preparing for trial, there is this limited window of time where President Obama could switch sides. Up until this point, his administration has been sitting side by side with the fossil fuel industry defending this case and denying that these young people hold fundamental rights that are at risk. Now that we have a clear decision, a beautiful decision from the court, President Obama has an opportunity to come to the table and actually try to work out some protective measures that we could enter into in a consent decree with the court to settle at least part of this case and put real protections in place before the next administration comes in.
You know, Paul may be wondering this too. Are there some financial damages that are in the mix here along with a change in policy?
No, this is not a damages case. These plaintiffs will not gain any financial benefit from doing this case. They're not asking for money. What they want is to protect their lives and their homes and their security and that of future generations.
Jacob, if you were sitting across from President Obama now, or for that matter, President-elect Trump, what would you say to them about the importance of climate change if you had the opportunity to do that face-to-face?
Well, I think my speech would probably be very different whether it was Obama or Donald Trump. And to Obama right now, I would say, please come settle and consider coming to the table with us, because we're really on the same side of this fight. And you have a chance to protect your climate legacy. As Julia was just talking about, he has a chance to come to the table and set protective measures that will hold a Trump administration accountable. And to Donald Trump, I think he needs to understand that when scientists say that something is happening with almost 100% certainty, that's just like going to the doctor and getting told that you have cancer, to maybe, 92% of a chance that you have cancer. You don't start, arguing on that 8%. You try to go to treatment, right? And so what's happening right now is with a lot of the climate deniers is they're saying, no, there's nothing going on right now. And there's obviously a lot of interest, private interest taking a part in that. And so I would just tell him that if he will deny the voices of science, and he will deny the voices of faith leaders who are saying that a peaceful and just world cannot coexist with the where we're heading with our planet, then he won't be able to deny our voices. He won't be able to deny the voices of the youth and the next generation. And so we will see him in court.
Jacob, thanks very much. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks.
Julia, we have a request here on Twitter about the place where you donate to your legal efforts. I'm sure you've got a website you can share with us.
Yes, so you go to ourchildrenstrust.org. And we welcome all donations to help support these youth in bringing this case forward against the Trump administration, if that's where we're headed.
Good luck, and thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Paul, what else are you watching?
Well, I'll tell you what, speaking of donations, some of the nonprofits that advocate for climate change reform are getting what they're calling a Trump bump in the last week
since
the election. Cash donations, volunteer workers spiking in the past week. For organizations like the Environmental Defense Fund, which has had twice as many donations versus the same week last year. Sierra Club, 9,000 new monthly donors since Election Day. Carrie, that's more than the entire year-to-date period before Election Day. So interesting to see how this changes here in our third consecutive warmest year on average globally, which looks like it's locked in now with the October data.
I think we were also saying, Paul, that this is Give to the Max Day. Mm-hmm. And even though they've had some problems with the server, I think it's back up. And if you want to support science, and I'm going to say any kind of science, including climate science, there may be some more. I know there are organizations on that list that would love to have you give to the Max.
Absolutely.
On that.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.